My fellow plebs, River is setting a new standard in Bitcoin. At river.com, you'll pay zero fees when you dollar cost average. Truly the best way to build your Bitcoin wealth. All Bitcoin at River is held in secure cold storage with 100% full reserves. There's no need to wonder what's happening behind the scenes. Your Bitcoin is your Bitcoin to withdraw at any time. Additionally, River lets you make Bitcoin payments via the Lightning Network, offers a Lightning integration for developers, and allows you to mine Bitcoin directly to your River account. River has a level of service that is unheard of in this industry, including phone support, private client advisors, and the ability to designate beneficiaries to inherit your Bitcoin wealth. River has become the premium name in Bitcoin that anyone can easily access. Sure, you have a place to buy Bitcoin, but have you tried River? See and feel the difference at river.com and the River iOS app, the preferred partner of Bitcoin Magazine. Over the last 5 years, the Bitcoin Conference has become the world's largest gathering of Bitcoiners. From breaking announcements and international media coverage to countless meaningful talks by thought leaders and industry innovators, we are excited to continue our drive for global hyper-Bitcoinization. From July 25th to the 27th, 2024, we'll be taking the Bitcoin Conference to the city of Music and Freedom, Nashville, Tennessee. Join thousands of attendees for countless opportunities to learn, engage, and network across 3 days of pure Bitcoin signal. Get your tickets now for the best price at b.tc/conference. You are not going to want to miss what Nashville has in store.
Bitcoiners, welcome back to another episode of the Bitcoin Magazine podcast. I have another great episode for you today. I'm joined by Prince Filip Karadjordjevic of Serbia and Yugoslavia. He studied at the University of London in Spanish studies. He's fluent in Spanish, actually. Then went to work for an Icelandic bank, which unfortunately went under during the 2008 financial crisis. Went to hotel school for a little bit, but ultimately went back to finance due to the money being better there. In 2017, he learned about Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies, but it wasn't until 2020 that he really saw Bitcoin as the one and true only cryptocurrency. And then later in 2021, sold all of his altcoins. And then a few years later, is now working as the chief strategy officer of Jan3. So without further ado, I'm welcomed by Prince Filip. How's it going, Filip? How are you?
Hi, Chris. Thanks for having me on. That's a nice introduction.
I hope I got everything right.
I think you got everything right there. Yeah.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. So I guess if there's anything I'd missed or if that was a good introduction, I can get into the first question.
Well, maybe living situation that right in the middle of 2020, I moved countries. I was living in London where my old job was, my old asset management finance. Traditional finance job was, and because everything went online because of COVID, I was thinking, hey, this is a good time to move to Serbia, and we'll see what happens. What if they'll ever ask me to come back? We'll see what deal we can do and stuff. But let's just go. Let's just move now because I've got my job, good job here. I can get paid a UK salary in Serbia. Let's make this happen. My wife agreed, and so we moved on the 28th of June 2020. So that's just three years ago.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's really, really cool.
And then since then, I studied more about Bitcoin in 2020. As you said, I sold all my shit coins 2021. And sorry, am I allowed to say that?
Yeah, no, that's good. Love it.
Yeah, I think you said altcoins, but same things. And 2021, and in March 2022 is when I was when I went public on my Bitcoin status. That on the Ivan Ivanovic show, that's like the biggest evening show here in Serbia, and he asked me about my old job at the time, and then he interrupted me knowing that I'm into Bitcoin and asked me about crypto, and I said, well, you know, it's not about crypto, it's all about Bitcoin, and went on about 3 minute spiel, and then that went viral. Next thing I know, I'm in Miami and I'm meeting people like Samson who offered me a job at Jan3, and then
awesome.
Here I am speaking to you.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's a really cool timeline. So I guess ultimately I wanted to ask, like, I'm assuming you were doing quite well in finance. Obviously, there's a lot of jokes that say all of the engineers in the 90s were going into finance because you could make way more money on Wall Street or Jan Street or whatever it is. That seems to be only ramping up because of fiat currencies, as you and I know, why you can make more and more money there. But ultimately, what made you leave the finance world to come into the Bitcoin world?
I saw the future. I saw... I finally understood what money is. Before, you know, everyone knows that money corrupts. That's a given, you know, the money rules the world and all that. And I thought I had it all covered, all understood when I was working in traditional finance for all those years. But then, you know, I buy Bitcoin in 2017. One of my best friends introduced me to it. And it's like, he just told me about the whole inflation hedge. There won't be any more than 21 million ever produced. And I thought, that's interesting. You know, maybe, and there's other things as well that you can get interested in. And you'll make some money. Okay, great. I'll make some money. So that's what I did. I predominantly bought Bitcoin. I got distracted by some of the other altcoins as well. And it was, I kind of believed in Bitcoin, but not to the degree that I am today. I knew that it's going to have to play an important part to the future, but not like I understand today. It took 2020 for the financial, for the pandemic to hit, for me to see the more stimulus than has ever been printed, more money than has ever been printed, ever been issued out in the whole of the history of fiat and the whole history of civilization, to realize, okay, this is not right. Something is going to this is wrong. I was aware that the 2008 financial crisis was a big problem. I was aware that quantitative easing was a huge issue. And, you know, I was aware of the Cantillon effect. I thought I was quite well-read in all these issues. I guess my views were a little bit more lefty, but then 2020 happened and I thought, oh, well, I studied more into Bitcoin. And that's when I realized that I went onto Bitcoin Twitter and started reading some amazing tweets, started following some amazing accounts, laughed at some amazing memes. Memes are great at communicating the messages in a picture. I thought that was fantastic. And next thing I know, I'm like, oh, wow, I'm actually got the keys to the future in my pocket right now. This is huge. It was a really eye-opening and also very personal moment for me, that the fact is that I was just starting a family at the time. My son was, I met my wife in 2016. I married her 2017. We had our son 2018. And so I was, and now we're pregnant with us. Well, I'm not pregnant. Sorry. My wife is pregnant. We're going to have our second child in November. And it's, and now this is what it's about. Bitcoin is about building this future for that next generation and the following generation. Bitcoin is what's going to solve all these societal issues and the fiat disaster, the fiat project nightmare that's bestowed upon all of us. And finally, we have a solution and there's light at the end of the tunnel. It's just giving me so much hope. And here I am today, this working for a company like Jan 3, trying to spread the knowledge in orange pill nation states.
Yeah. Well, I want to congratulate you and your wife on the additional addition to your family. That's awesome.
Thank you.
I hope you guys have a healthy pregnancy and you know, happy and healthy wife and baby in November. So that's
happy,
excellent.
Happy wife, happy life.
Definitely. Yeah, I'm kind of similar to you. So in 2017, I thought Bitcoin and crypto at large were just all kind of tulip mania. And, you know, 2018, I felt like I was proven right. It only took basically 2020 to occur and saw all this money printing that I was really like, all right, Chris, you messed up. That's fine. You can lick your wounds. But I got into Bitcoin in 2020. And similar to you, I was very lucky that I had a very abridged shitcoining phase. It was maybe a week, 2 weeks. And then I was
my shitcoining phase was a lot longer. To tell the truth, the first time I was introduced to Bitcoin was 2012.
Really? Okay.
Yes. I came across it and it was before it went to 100. I think it was about 30 some dollars. And someone said, oh, is it going to go to 100? It's like, what's this Bitcoin? And literally dismissed it as magic internet money.
Yeah.
Didn't look back twice at it. And then next thing, it wasn't until 2017. And then that's when I understood what it kind of was.
But, yeah. I was actually introduced to it, I guess, 2010 or 2011. My dad is a computer programmer. He worked at AT&T for like 35 years and now retired. But back then he heard about the Laszlo pizza transaction. He's
all
like,
right,
should I put $1,000 into this? And I was like, nah, it's never going to work. So, you yeah. know, him and I are licking our wounds from that
I
one.
So most of the population would have heard of that pizza transaction, you know, the it going to whatever. It's we all instantly, everyone, and if there's like 0.01%, I mean, I don't know what the population is going to actually attach to Bitcoin from the get go, but 99.9% of us will dismiss it from the beginning when we're introduced to it. I think that's different now, though. I think that's given what how far we've come and how good the level of education is and how good the literature and content is on Bitcoin these days, I think it's quick. We can orange pill people quicker. So yeah. I think now that 99.9% has now moved down to maybe 90% of people will now will dismiss it, while the 10% will be like, oh, that's interesting. And I think that number will get better and better. As also the world, you'll see the world slowly disintegrate and fall apart before our eyes. All you have to do is just have an open eye, having a slightly open mind. Obviously, the more open mind, the better. But I think these days, just a little bit of an open mind will actually make you aware of the significance of what Bitcoin is.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think it's kind of one of those things that it needs multiple touch points. Obviously, your touch points were much slower in the earlier days, yeah. Unless you're a cryptographer or into developing and coding and stuff like that, and you were kind of really diving deep into Bitcoin. But I think nowadays, like you said earlier, like memes are kind of great for communicating messages or making things more simple for people to understand. I always think of Lena Cishe, the little hodler memes that she makes are always excellent. The little cartoon caricatures on Twitter, I think, always do a great job, like relaying the message of kind of showing fiat collapsing while Bitcoin's building for hopefully a better future that we hope. So I guess my next question is, I know that you talked about pretty ad nauseum on Saifedean's podcast about Bitcoin and monarchies. Mm-hmm. So you guys kind of had a real deep dive. We won't go as deep there, but yes, I'd love to hear your synergies between Bitcoin and monarchies and, you know, how maybe Bitcoin is more fiat and, you know, democratic republics or kind of the system that we have today. So I'd love your thoughts on that.
Sure, of course. Well, I think there's two main synergies between Bitcoin and monarchies, and that is low time preference and individual property rights. With the low time preference aspect, and I'm talking about monarchy in its purest form, in its absolute form, monarchies in their absolute form have to make sound decisions that last for the long term. That these decisions have to last for generations. So if one monarch makes a bad decision, his children, the next generations, preceding generations could suffer from those bad decisions. So good decisions have to be made by a monarch. That is low time preference at its greatest, basically. The fact is that a monarch wants to preserve himself wants his family to be in that position for generations to come, then it's all about clever decisions. The other side of it is the aspect of individual property rights. A monarch has everything he needs. A monarch has his palace or his castle and some of his land, his whatever it is he has enough, and he should not take more from his people. If he takes more from his people, he won't leave enough for the future generations, and people will revolt. So he has to make sure that his people are all taken care of. That means that his people need to have very strong property rights, individual property rights. Otherwise, there'll be revolutions. That's really what it is. Bitcoin and monarchy in the synergies in a nutshell.
Yeah, no, I think that's really great. I think one thing that we see throughout history a lot of times, or at least the story that's told throughout history, is normally there's a great king or a king that's excellent, and then normally his son or his heirs, future down the line, are not great kings, whether they're bad or malicious or evil.
So DNA does play a part in it. I think really that if you have a if quite it's quite I mean. I can't. It's quite hard to argue from my position, you know, because I am a prince myself. But you're not going to often get a bad egg that often. But when you do get a bad egg, you have to make sure that the system, the system monarchy, does have some decentralization within the system itself. So you will have like a royal council, a privy council, different decentralized councils in order to mitigate any sort of harsh bad decisions by the monarch himself. So that's very important. One other thing I didn't actually talk about is the fact that you talked about it, the links between about democracies that we have today, And the fact that the reason why I'm in favor of going back to a monarchy, at least in its, not in its purest form, that will be amazing. But I don't think we're that's good. That's almost unrealistic. But at least within a parliamentary monarchy, is that it will, it does create an extra point of decentralization, and you need to keep check of democracies. Democracies are very low, a very high time preference organization structures. Every 4 or 5 years, there's a new election. Every 4 or 5 years, those people running for office want to continue being in that position. And while they continue being in that position, they're going to do as much as they can in order to, I'm being quite, not honest, what's the word, but yeah, basically, quite often you'll find that the democracies will find that they'll try to line their pockets as much as they can during their time in office for themselves and their connections, and this is only aided and accelerated by having that money printer, by the fiat system on your side. If you have that access to that free that money at no cost, zero cost, then you will take a lot while you're in office, and that will form power structures that will tend to give democracies all form into one. So it will be like an illusion of choice when you have that ballot paper, when you're going to choose your next party, your next leader. That is an illusion of choice. Really, you're just choosing your next method of totalitarianism. So there, it's flawed. Democracies are flawed. Democracy is not equal freedom. And this is something that's going to be quite hard for a lot of people to swallow, that democracy, the word democracy, is very much associated with freedom these days. And they push for that. But really, freedom is not democracy. Freedom is responsibility. Freedom is having good responsibility, and that is being able to take care of yourself, and that's what Bitcoin is. So I tend to err on the side of libertarianism in anarcho-capitalism. But somehow, if we can have some absolute monarchy installed in there with as a protector of faith, as a protector of family values, as a protector of traditions, then you have quite an attractive system.
Yeah, definitely. I agree. There's a quote from that you told your mom, and I think she got very mad at you. You're like, what's even the point of voting? They all do the same thing anyway. And I think this is a quote that you said to her when you were younger. It's kind of the way that I see the world right now, you know, not really left or right. You know, obviously those are options, but it does seem like there was a great chart just showing like the money printing across the US presidents, at least going back to George Bush Sr. all the way to present day. And it's just like a straight line up of like all the money printing, obviously, the 2008 financial crisis accelerated that. The 2020 crisis accelerated that. But even with our new current president Biden, you know, the printing's just ramping up. Obviously, whether it's supporting the Ukraine-Russian war or whatever, they'll find a reason to print.
Find a reason, and COVID was a very good reason to print. And I think, you know, Trump. It started in Trump's era, but I think Trump was duped into the whole the fiat hysterics of what COVID is. Not that I'm a Trump supporter or I'm far no way a Biden supporter. I'm not fond of politicians, but of course, had I given a choice, I would choose Trump over Biden. But the COVID spending is the worst moment of money printing that we've ever had, and it's now showing now that we had official inflation figures last year reaching in the US, that is nine almost 10%. Those are official. Obviously, the way they're calculated is very very questionable, but now they're creeping up again. Like, you know, inflation doesn't come in one strike; it can often come in two or more strikes. So now with the recent prints, you can see that inflation is creeping up again. And I think it hasn't seeped down to the average brick and mortar shop. And these guys, these small businesses have done everything they can to try and keep their prices as low as possible to compete with the big guys. But now they can't anymore. In order to survive, they're going to have to pump up the prices. So now we're going to see, I reckon that we're going to see inflation rocket again it rocket. Well, we'll see it. We'll see official numbers. We're going to see them go close to 10 again, maybe towards the end of the year.
Yeah, we're all already seeing the Fiat economists, whether it's Paul Krugman, say, oh, maybe inflation should be at 3% instead of 2%. So,
oh yeah, the redefining of life, basically, yes.
Yeah, and what really hurts is, like, if you're a billionaire or 100 million or hedge fund or a large corporation or business, like, that inflation you just put into your costs and you basically pass on to your customers, your stock inflates, so you're basically able to ride the
wave. Oh yeah, and you blame your greedy workers for wanting higher wages. That's what drives inflation. And you know, so that's what drives prices up. You're going to blame everything else apart from the money printer.
Yeah, exactly. So I know you mentioned kind of like monarchies help decentralize power, and you were kind of going down the breakdown of that. We've kind of seen the decentralization of Bitcoin adoption. So we've just celebrated 2 years of El Salvador adopting mm-hmm. Bitcoin as legal tender. Then we saw it kind of spread the following year to Madeira, Lugano. Other places have crept up, whether it's Bitcoin Jungle in Costa Rica. You know, it's kind of this decentralized, slow creep of expansion of Bitcoin. Right. And we've even seen pockets in the U.S., whether Texas is kind of like a mining hub of the world. We could talk about how that's good or bad, but I'd love to hear your thoughts on like how Bitcoin adoption has been with Jan 3. And maybe if you want to drop some alpha of other countries you're talking to, or maybe at least tease a few that you're talking to.
Well, sure. We understand at Jan 3, we understand that Bitcoin adoption is a bottom-up. Mainly, it's predominant. Bitcoin is a bottom-up approach, but sometimes we have to also approach it from a top-down position as well, and that's what we focus on at Jan 3 as well. We're going to release our new wallet, which is the Aqua wallet, which is going to be that's a bottom-up approach. It's going to have also USDT stablecoin attached to it, and it's going to be completely self-custodial, and it's going to be big in Latin America, having USDT Tether on liquid chain. That means it's completely Bitcoin-centric wallet. So that's one aspect. That's one thing that we're doing at Jan 3. We are having conversations around the world. I don't want to name the people we're having conversations with, but I'm going to say that there is a lot of interest. As you can see recently in the news, like last month, there was Oman investing, I think, about $1.3 billion in Bitcoin mining. There was also the news early this year about the Kingdom of Bhutan secretly mining for several years as well. Mm-hmm. Madeira is interesting, you know, given their autonomous
region
position,
or zone,
region,
yeah.
Position within the European Union, they're able to sort of de facto adopt it as well. So that's interesting as well. So I'm also looking within our region as well, you know, Republika Srpska in Bosnia-Herzegovina. That's the Serbian autonomous region of Bosnia-Herzegovina. I was recently there having conversations. So there's a little, a little preview of what some things can happen. You talked about, you know, adoption can happen in many shapes and form. It can either happen through straight up, top-down approach like Bukele did with El Salvador, which I think it's great. But he at least gives an option for people to use either US dollar or Bitcoin, and having that option is fine. That's like, you know, competition. You know, money is essentially should be is private. Government issued money currency is ludicrous to me. So he's given the option of one government issued money that doesn't even come from his government and Bitcoin. El Salvadorians don't understand, 95% of them don't understand what the opportunity they have in front of them, but that's going to increase with time as they realize that they actually can use Bitcoin freely. And you will see the adoption grow, even explode in El Salvador soon. Lugano, you think Lugano is it's part of the third biggest banking sector of Switzerland. You know, why this out of all countries, Switzerland, having one of the lowest inflation problems, having been one of the richest countries by GDP per capita, having the highest salaries in the world, why are they interested in Bitcoin? Why do they need Bitcoin? Because they're intelligent. They understand that Bitcoin is the future. So why not adopt it in some shape or form? Then you have the energy adoption. You have Texas doing flare-off, adopting their flare-offs. You have people using in the Congo, you have the one Belgian prince. Actually, he doesn't like to show off about this too much because I guess of the situation in the Congo, but there's a Belgian prince in Congo mining Bitcoin using hydroelectric power, and the mining proceeds go towards the protection of that natural of that park. So there's Bitcoin adoption in all shapes or forms happening all around the world. And the other thing you mentioned was communities like Bitcoin Jungle in Costa Rica, the original Bitcoin Beach in El Salvador, and there's many others. We're going to have these communities popping up all around the world. That's the bottom up adoption that we're all interested in. That's what sparked the adoption of El Salvador. That's what Bukele got interested in to adopt Bitcoin as legal tender in El Salvador. So we really have to work on those projects. And that's why we at Jan3 are releasing Aqua wallets, which helps with that type of adoption. But at the same time, we have conversations with nation states, with politicians, with leaders, ministers, and with generally high net worth individuals, influential people, influencers, you name it. We will talk to them about what Bitcoin can do for them, but then what Bitcoin can do for their people, and make them understand that if you don't make a good decision about Bitcoin now, you will not, it was not that you will suffer, but better to be one of the first movers than one of the late movers, you know, game theory.
definitely. I want to circle back to El Salvador of it all. So I do agree that it came down as a top-down order, but I really think El Salvador as a whole was a grassroots movement. Like in 2014, 2015, obviously there was Bitcoin Beach. There was kind of a circular economy. And, you know, it kind of slowly built up, so much so that a federal government or Bukele saw this and was basically like, we should adopt this as a national policy. I even think in their education system, they just had Mi Primer Bitcoin been operating, I think, over a year at this point. And they were doing basically grassroots Bitcoin education to help El Salvadorian
citizens.
Now it's
part of the system.
Exactly. Some people are saying, I saw a critique already that like, oh, the public government system is forcing education. It's like, no. You're mixing up the thing. It was this private company spun up, had tens of thousands, quite literally tens of thousands of people learning about Bitcoin, that it was so popular that it got put into the government system. They were adopting something that the free market was.
Because they were learning about how money actually works. They're learning about the history of money. They're learning about how the world actually works. That's why it made it in there.
I completely agree.
They were getting rid of their indoctrination. They've put in a de-indoctrination syllabus into their system. So there you go.
Yeah, definitely. I guess so. You brought up Aqua Wallet, and that's something that I actually wanted to touch on as well.
Oh, great.
Yeah, so I know that obviously when Bitcoin was made legal tender in El Salvador, Bukele kind of spun up Chivo Wallet. There's been a lot of mixed reviews, you know, anger, frustration, hate, whatever it is. But basically Chivo Wallet kind of struggled to get off the ground. I guess, how do you guys see Aqua Wallet helping El Salvador? I know there was Bitcoin Beach Wallet, which now I believe is Blix Wallet. I always forget what it changed its name to. Bitcoin Beach Wallet was there from the beginning as a grassroots one. How do you see Aqua Wallet helping out El Salvador or even nation state adoption at large that'll use this in the future?
Well, firstly, Chivo Wallets, you got to give, I mean, they had a bad rep from the beginning, which is sad. They had some challenges. They were the first ones to, it was the first time anything like this has ever happened. And the fact that they got it actually up and running was fantastic. I think that was an achievement. And of course, they're going to have some teething issues, but still, I congratulate them for doing it. What I'm a supporter of is obviously competition. So, you know, the likes of the Bitcoin Jungle Wallet coming up as well, and being people being able to use that, and then other competitors like ourselves, Aqua Wallet. I think it's healthy competition that we are able to use other wallets, because that only means that the customer gets the best can choose his best experience possible. And that's what we aim to do with the Aqua Wallet, is to make it as easy to use wallet for Bitcoiners, but also to have that exposure to dollar through USDT on Liquid. So we're aiming for it to be a big wallet in Latin America as well as the world. So we're aiming for it to be a mega app. And it's really excited. It's something I'm really excited about. This is an opportunity that we really want to make sure that it's going to be self-custody, because we believe that it's all about responsibility, and we believe that individuals, maximalists, and people who just want to have an opportunity to be banked have an opportunity now, that an easy wallet like Aqua is going to be able accessible in the middle of somewhere in the middle of nowhere. I say middle, no, I hate saying that. That's kind of a negative phrase. But somewhere where banks, the actual banking structure doesn't reach. And I'm not saying this because banks are being nefarious. I'm saying this because it's It's not very cost effective for banks to have a presence in all parts, in all regions. It's just not cost effective for them. Whereas you can have mobile phone reception, you can have internet, you can have Starlink, you can have GPS, whatever it is, in all parts of the world. And as long as you have that, you can have a bank account. And better than that, you can have a self-custody bank account with something like Aqua. So that's going to be huge. That's going to change. That's going to mean that billions of people around the world will now be able to save their money in something that lasts forever.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And I think that's kind of a story that's missed. I know a lot of Bitcoiners hit this topic, but back in El Salvador in probably 2020, 2021, and before, El Salvador had a huge gang issue. They were one of the highest murder rates per capita in the world, quite literally one of the most dangerous countries in the world. And part of this was, I think 18% or 20% of their GDP was remittances. So mm-hmm. a lot of times El Salvadoran citizens were moving to other countries, whether it's Mexico, the US, Europe, wherever it may be, to get a better life and a better living. And in doing so, they were sending money back to El Salvador. In doing so, they had to use the likes of Western Union, where they're charging 10, 15, 20% fees.
I think the average fee is 6%. That's it. So that's way too much.
Yeah, that's even way more than in the Western world with credit card fees, like double the amount of credit card fees.
Exactly.
But even then, when they were sending money back to Western Union, normally people would have to hop on a bus, spend a few hours to get to the nearest Western Union. And then ultimately the gangs can't camp out outside of there because they know someone's withdrawing fiat money and either hold them up or extort them for their money. So it was dangerous, long, wasteful, where now you could just have a Bitcoin wallet, whether it's on-chain or Lightning, and you can be on a Zoom call like this and just send them money across the internet, which is
precisely it's a beautiful thing, and this is what's changing the world. It's going to make the world a much much safer, much more prosperous, and we actually have some hope for the future that people can actually save their hard-earned money, their energy can be stored in something indestructible as Bitcoin. And now we're seeing, and you were saying that the elimination of gangs and what Bukele has done in El Salvador is he's had some bad rep from a lot of activists, but I think what he's done is he's freed El Salvador, and he's given them options to use the dollar, to use Bitcoin, got rid of the gangs. Yes, it's never going to be an easy process getting rid of gangs. Some innocent people are going to get stuck in there. But now when I went to El Salvador last November, I spoke to some locals there because I speak Spanish, and everyone is really happy with the situation. They say their children are now playing in the streets. They can go walk back from school by themselves. They can gather together without any fear of being harassed or anything by these horrible gangs that existed before. Now, just yesterday, just seeing the news or looking at Twitter and seeing the likes of the emir, the sultan, I guess you call it sultan, the emir of Qatar, flying his private jet into El Salvador to meet Bukele is incredible. The fact that there would be no reason why the emir of Qatar would fly over all the way to El Salvador, not the biggest country in Latin America. Why would he do that? But no, he's doing that because Bukele has the highest approval rating of any president in the world for the measures, the things that he's done. Everyone loves him for those reasons, for having these new technology laws. That means that people can set up business there with good tax advantages. And that means people are moving back there. People are not just moving, El Salvadorans are moving back, but actually anyone is now able to move to El Salvador. And if you told me that in 2015, 16, that people will be moving to El Salvador because it's a free, safest country in Latin America, I thought, you'd be crazy. Because El Salvador, San Salvador City, was the murder capital of the world. Not anymore, thanks to some actions of a very intelligent individual. So, yeah, I think the world will have a lot to learn from El Salvador. It's not perfect, I'll admit that, but there's going to be many, hopefully more, that the knock-on effects of El Salvador, that they've sent positive shockwaves, not only in Latin America, but across the world. And we saw that yesterday with the emir of Qatar arriving in El Salvador.
Yeah, and it's fascinating too when you think of like El Salvador. I think their population is 6 million. I mean, they're much smaller than even just Manhattan alone, or the larger, Greater New York City area. And this small country that, like you said, used to be the murder capital of the world, doesn't have the biggest GDP, but having the Emirah of Qatar coming in, which Qatar, right, there's a lot of money, obviously, with the amount of oil that's there, and they're able to sell into the market. So obviously,
yeah, go to El Salvador and learn a few things, and you have all that. You're an energy rich country. I wonder what you can do next. You know, go take some lessons as well from Oman as well.
Definitely. So. So I only have two more, or I guess three more questions before we wrap up here. But so the one thing I want to ask is, what do you think is holding nation state adoption back? So I guess without saying price, maybe it is only price. Bull markets and bear markets kind of dictate when people come in or when people leave. But I'd love to hear your thoughts on what's holding nation state adoption back.
Price, of course, is one thing, because people obviously are very much get involved when they see number goes up. But I think the other thing is obviously existing power structures. I think Bitcoin really rattles the cage. Bitcoin really is, it's a new world, and it threatens a lot of existing power structures. So it will take time for a cycle or two of elections for people to put Bitcoin to use Bitcoin on their platforms to get elected. You already see this in America. People like JFK Jr. and some other candidates actually using Bitcoin on their platform. I think you'll start to see this around the world. What's the other thing? I mean, European Union, you won't see that. You see that the power structure in European Union is very much anti-Bitcoin, anti-crypto, fine, but you know, anti-Bitcoin. So they're going to lag. You won't see much adoption there, apart from places like Madeira, given their autonomous status, you won't. But that's like de facto adoption. The other thing that's slowing people back is that Bitcoin threatens existing power structures.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And I guess my second to last question is, what do you think is helping nation state adoption? Obviously, we've talked ad nauseum of El Salvador and other places that are adopting it. And the positive.
I think the big driver for nation state adoption is energy. I think energy is key, because that's really what it's. I mean, Bitcoin is an energy back. Currency, it's an energy-backed money. That's what it is, and I think that's what's waking a lot of people, a lot of countries up, is that if they are energy rich or not, they can look towards Bitcoin mining or Bitcoin to extract money out of what their own resources, and to actually use Bitcoin mining, incentive structures of Bitcoin mining, to find new energy sources and make energy more available to their people, but at the same time make some money out of it. And maybe use that money to build infrastructure projects or things like that to better lives of their own people, but also just random maxis out there as well, just finding starting up projects and pushing for Bitcoin adoption in their own bottom up ways that create communities around the world. So I think the mixture of energy and just dedicated, aware, awake people is what's going to drive Bitcoin adoption.
Yeah, I think that's good. I actually kind of want to expand on that topic as well. I know Marty Bent and Saif Adin definitely talk about this. Why would an oil-rich nation, whether it's the U.S. or Saudi Arabia or whatever, why would they accept, you know, their precious natural resource that is oil and gas for a currency that the U.S. can just print into oblivion? Obviously, it's been pretty stable over the last, you know, 100 years or so, or, you know, there's different iterations of it. But why would basically they give their precious natural resource when we can just print infinite dollars?
That's the thing. The petrodollars was, well, part of the fiat project that happened after 1971. I think the reason is, I mean, why someone is rich as energy and resource rich as Saudi Arabia couldn't just say, why don't you just settle on our currency? It's because then they will have to export their own currency. So then they are subject to what's known as the Triffin dilemma. That means that they'll have to import more than they export. Otherwise, they will suffer from inflation. I believe that's probably the reason why.
Yeah.
So now if you have a global currency that's shared across the world equally, then there's no dilemmas in that. So I think with time they will settle in Bitcoin, but it's going to take a bit of back and forth. BRICS are going to have a hard time figuring out which currency they want to start using and stuff. So that's why, due to the Triffin dilemma, all those countries, Brazil, India, China, Russia, and all that, they're all net exporters. So if they want to have hold any sort of global reserve currency status, they will have to then become net importers to balance the fact that they're exporting money. So that's an issue. So then if that's the problem, there's going to be also just the fact that you have BRICS fighting with each other. They're not going to get on all the time. They're going to fall out at some at certain points in time. So they're all going to then go to something that they can all trust, and that's going to be ultimately Bitcoin. You know, all money, everything will tend to one. So Bitcoin.
Yeah, I completely agree. Philip, I think that's a great spot to stop. I guess my last question to you is anything that you want to pitch or talk about, anything that you're doing with Jan 3 or anything in general?
Well, apart from the release, we're excited about releasing Aqua Wallet in the coming, well, by Q4 this year. We've also opened up our Jan 3 OTC, and it's called Jan 3 Financial. So we are selling Bitcoin as well. And that's going to be released open properly in the next month or two as well. So apart from nation state adoption and spreading and orange pilling the world, nation states and individuals about Bitcoin, we're busy doing a lot of bottom up projects and selling Bitcoin itself.
That's awesome. Thank you so much, Philip. It has been a pleasure talking to you. I had a blast with this conversation.
Likewise, Chris.
Thank you so much. Thanks everyone for listening to the podcast. Make sure to get your tickets to Bitcoin Amsterdam at b.tc/conference/Amsterdam. You can use the code BMLive to get 10% off your tickets. It's 28 days out. Can't wait to see everyone there. And then also you can get your tickets to Bitcoin 2024 in Nashville, July 25th through 27th. You can use code BMLive to get 10% off your tickets. Can't wait to go to Nashville and see you guys all there. Have a good one, everyone. Peace.
Thank you, Miami, for the last 3 years in this amazing city. The whole world shut down, but Miami welcomed us with open arms. We want to show Bitcoin to the whole world. We are taking the conference on the road to set the stage for Bitcoin in a new city. Nashville. Bitcoin 2024 is coming to Nashville in Tennessee. A city that is known as a music and freedom city. Bitcoin 2024 in Nashville from July 25th to 27th.
My fellow plebs, Bitcoin Magazine is headed back to Amsterdam in 2023. We're returning to Westergaas to build on this historic success and continue our mission of global hyper-Bitcoinization. Bitcoin Amsterdam was the biggest European Bitcoin event in history, held from October 12th to the 14th at Westergaas Event Forum, offering 6 different on-site locations and 3 fully programmed stages. We are absolutely stoked to catapult the European community to the global stage. Tickets are at their lowest prices right now. Lock yours in at b.tc/conference/Amsterdam. That's b.tc/conference/Amsterdam.